Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and main.dalecarnegie.com. Today, our guest, our returning guest, is Mark Gonska from Dyson Company. He's an executive coach, executive recruiter, executive everything, right? Aren't you everything, Mark?
Yeah, just call me executive. That'll work.
No, it's awesome. And welcome back to the show.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
So much is going on in the world in regards to hiring, in regards to, you know, making sure that people are, and talent in general is being selected. It's such a tight labor market out there. You hearing the same thing from your clients?
We are indeed. We've had a couple of interesting data points. 2017 had the fewest number of layoffs in the United States in 44 years. So people just aren't leaving, and there's a good reason why, because many employers are wondering how could they ever find somebody to replace it.
No, it's very true. I mean, you think 5 years ago, even 4 years ago, people were hunkered down in their jobs. They didn't want to go anywhere. They were scared. Now the market is different. It's totally different, and people are really looking.
They're voting with their feet. With an unemployment rate hovering around 4%, we used to consider a 5% unemployment rate being full employment. So it's pretty safe to say that nearly everybody who wants a job has one. It doesn't mean that people couldn't be unhappy with their jobs or underemployed. But I think what we're seeing is a movement of top talent, because the top talent has the confidence that it's not 2008 when we're just trying to keep the door open of the organization and maybe we're furloughing the workers to 32 hours. No. We're seeing a stock market that's been a bit of a roller coaster lately, but it's much stronger than it has been, and there's a confidence level, whether that's a function of tax cuts or tax changes, whatever you want to attribute, there's a lot higher confidence, and that means let's invest and let's hire. And the trouble is we can't find the talent to hire.
Yeah, that's the real challenge right now. I mean, there is just a lack of talent pool. I always say, and this, I'm sure you'll agree, great talent is always out there. It's just a matter of finding it. But in this particular case, even the great talent is really a challenge to find.
Well, without going overboard on statistics, David, the baby boomers, of which I know I look young, but I'm actually in that group, the baby boomers are aging out of the workforce at this point, and the group that follows the baby boomers is 12% smaller. So it's not our imagination that it's hard to find talent. There's less talent to be found. And I think our needs are different. Our expectations, the expectations of employers are different. We're looking for one employee to wear multiple hats and add value. We can no longer afford to be in a situation where it's just a simple shuffling papers around. We're going to look for a different skill set of technology utilization and different ways to add value than maybe the expectations that we had 20 or 30 years ago. And that, with a declining number of available candidates, and then greater expectations for multiple skill sets, and then strengthening of the economy, fueling greater hiring needs, it's kind of a perfect storm. We've heard for 20 years about, well, there's a real war for talent. I think we're in the midst of it, and it's only going to get tougher.
No, I 100% agree. The war for talent is now. And yes, they've threatened it for years, but now it's for real. And you do see companies really focusing on retaining talent and doing things to keep their talent, because the costs more than ever now to keep talent and to keep them happy. And they will leave. There is no question that the opportunities are out there for them to leave. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Today's topic is a PhD you should avoid at all costs. PhD?
Yeah, a PhD, a poor hiring decision. Because there's a couple schools of thought. One says, well, at least we could put a warm body in this space. No, that's always a bad decision. So a poor hiring decision, it's really a reflection of misplaced confidence. David, really, most people who've been in business for a decade or two figure they might know all about hiring, all about recruiting, all about finding, sourcing the best and brightest talent. And there's no doubt that it's important. Most people who are breathing are going to say that the most important thing that you have in your company are the people who make up that company. It's all about talent. The trouble is, many leaders can think that they're pretty good at evaluating talent. I think they probably feel pretty confident that they can hire kind of on a gut, kind of I'll know them when I see them. And they actually can. They can do that. Or they might operate on the, well, I'll use a clever assessment. I know of one that's very inexpensive, very widely used. It's an assessment that rhymes with the word risk. And they feel that they can out-science the process and save a lot of money and hire their own. So my bigger question about a PhD, a poor hiring decision, is recruiting and hiring something that a business leader should do herself or himself because they can?
So we're talking with Mark Gonska. He's the executive vice president and leads the outplacement practice for Dyson Company. He's also America's career coach. And we're talking to him about a PhD that you don't want. And that's a poor hiring decision. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Mark, you know, poor hiring decisions are made every day by really, really smart people. Why?
Because they can. That doesn't mean that they should. Just because the boss can hire and recruit doesn't mean that they should. I liken it to the idea of cutting one's own hair. They could do it. But because virtually anybody can grab a sharp pair of scissors and a bowl and cut their own hair. They can, but heavens, they shouldn't. Because while anyone could cut hair and even cut their own hair, the results are going to be dramatic in the wrong direction. Because really, even something like hair cutting that we might take for granted, that requires some specific training, some deep experience, and that's worth paying for. The results will be obvious, and you really don't want to look like a rodeo clown because you saved the money and cut your own hair. Nevertheless, that's where the PhD can come in. Many people do their own recruiting and hiring because they can.
Well, you know, HR professionals and business executives, they're pretty smart people, and they hire by their gut a lot. They know that right person, you know, when it comes in. I know who's going to work for me. Why is gut hiring such a challenge at times?
Well, there are people who look good, and they might have a delightful resume, and maybe we signed up for a technology package that shoots a whole bunch of resumes into our email box, and we kind of call through those. But it's much more sophisticated than just a gut feeling. And it's hard for the big boss to make all those decisions. How is that new candidate that you're hiring going to fit in the organization? It's not just the slogans that you have on the wall in the conference room or on the back of your business card. What are the real things that really matter in your organization? What are the sacred cows that we say, we want you to be the change agent here? But we don't mention the things that you better not change if you don't want to get your head taken off. What are the things that you have to know about the culture and the environment and the organization that not everybody posts on their website? How do you dig into the culture? A professional recruiter has an objectivity to be able to tell that story in a clear and compelling way without some of the baggage that, understandably, the big boss has after 20 years in the business, and quite frankly, it's not really all about your gut.
You know, it's an interesting situation when people say, I know the right person when I see them or when I talk to them or when I... And there is an element, I think, to be honest, that certainly we know people and connect with people that we like. I think that part of the challenge of hiring people that you quote-unquote like is that you don't look at the full gamut of what that person is like. Not only the fact that they may have a skill set or you may personally get along with them, but there's a bigger, deeper emphasis on what they can do for you, and that's what we're talking about today, right?
Well, if it was that easy, then 50% of the marriages wouldn't be ending in divorce. It's just the hardest thing to do. But it's really misplaced because there are people with incredible expertise in their own space, in their own industry. They're great people from the not-for-profit sectors who have a wonderful heart for social work and curing the ills of society and helping people out of horrible. That's what they do. And they're incredibly good at it. Incredibly good at it. But they're not headhunters. There are manufacturers in New England and across the country who are absolutely the best of the best at making widgets. They're not headhunters. There are all kinds of bankers and people in every field who are champions of what they do, but they're not headhunters. And so the thought that we can just put on a different hat and get into the recruiting mode, it's a dangerous move. Because recruiting's really not exclusively about your gut. It's not about how smart you are or how many years of experience you have. Those are all good things, but is it really whether we like the guy or the gal? The reality is, it's a tough call. And here's a phrase that I've used many times. If you don't know who you're looking for, you'll have no trouble finding them.
It's true.
If you don't know who you're looking for, you'll have no trouble finding him. Now, why would I say that? Because when I like a candidate and I feel good about them from my gut, as you indicated, David, it's very easy for me to only see the good and kind of not worry about some of the weaker spots of the candidate because I'm working with my gut. But have I really taken the time to delineate as if this is a million-dollar proposition? How could I invest $1 million, whether it's money or value to the organization or the reputation of my organization or my customer base that I've put together over 20, 30 years of time? Do I really think of it with that level of importance? It's a $1 million decision to hire the right leadership talent in an organization. Well, I think I should, because I think we can put all of those things at risk with a PhD, a poor hiring decision. And most business leaders have learned that the hard way. That doesn't mean they won't keep trying. Some people insist actually on pounding a nail in with their heads, but it's not the right tool to use. And it's really painful and really expensive.
You know, HR does a lot of hiring across an organization in many cases. And sometimes it's a single HR person that wears multiple and many hats. Sometimes it's, you know, certainly an HR person who might be in the talent space. Why should even at that level they consider using, again, a headhunter or a recruiter as a talent solution?
A great question, and one that I think bears some discussion. Again, an HR generalist may have recruiting as one of the skills in their toolbox. And it's not to say that they can't do recruiting, because they can. But the reality of the situation is they may be asked to do lots of things. That's why they may have the title of generalist. So they might be doing employee relations work. They might be doing wage and compensation issues. They might be doing Family and Medical Leave Act complicated issues. They might be doing payroll. They could be doing literally dozens of different tasks. And then we say, hey, in your spare time, we'd like you to carve out somehow a 24th or 25th or 26th or 30th hour out of your day and jump on this really high priority recruiting assignment. It's not that they couldn't do it, it's just that there's no bandwidth left to give this important million-dollar decision the time that it deserves. It's a time issue more than it is a talent issue.
We're talking with Mark Gonska. He's the Executive Vice President for Dyson Company. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. Our guest is the one, the only, Mark Gonska. He's the Executive Vice President and leads the outplacement practice for Dyson Company. He's also America's Career Coach. And we're talking about talent management, and we're talking about a PhD that you don't want to have. That's right, a PhD that you don't want to have. Mark, what's that PhD again?
The PhD that we're talking about in this case, David, is a poor hiring decision. That's the PhD. And it can be incredibly costly.
No question. So let's talk about costs. You know, we've been talking about reasons why people should use headhunters or recruiters or executive recruiters. One of the biggest complaints or biggest concerns that people or HR or CFOs especially and controllers say is, oh my God, they cost so much. They're expensive. However, I happen to know that they're not as expensive as people think. Why is that?
Well, I think it's important to consider all the costs, and some of them are hidden. It's expensive to hire a professional arborist to trim my trees in my backyard. After all, I can scramble up on a tree with a chainsaw and hope for the best, but I think some of us have seen that. I think there was a tombstone in my area where I live in Ohio. It was actually a tombstone from a former electrician. And engraved on the tombstone, it said, what does this do? And so the last decision that some people can make is a really costly one when they don't have the expertise. Maybe that gentleman decided to save the money of hiring a professional and said, I'll be the electrician today. I'll cut my own hair. There's lots of ways I can do it. So if we're looking at one thing only, the cost of bringing and retaining an executive recruiter, that's one cost to look at, and we typically charge a significant percentage of the first year's compensation. But let's take a look at why it might be a good investment. So let's compare the cost of hiring the wrong candidate, and what does a headhunter really do, a professional in the world of executive search? And what are the costs involved with getting that done the right way? One of the things that we might think about is expediency or time. Oftentimes when we want to hire somebody, we can't wait hour after hour, week after week, month after month. We want to get that candidate in soon. And while that urgency can be there, finding the time to actually get it done is a great reason to outsource this, because the recruiters on my team take time to research, evaluate, and interview candidates. It takes time away for an internal recruiter, the HR leader or the business leader, to do this themselves. That takes time away from their core business. Of course it does. So how many hours do you think could be involved in recruiting for a mission-critical position? Do you think that might be 10 hours or 20 hours? Well, it sure could be, even for one candidate. And then multiply that by the number of candidates to consider. Well, what if you say, hey, I don't have the time to take a look at a whole bunch of people. I got to get somebody in here. So let me just interview one candidate. If I like them, well, I'll hire them. You think you're really saving a lot by avoiding a professional executive recruiter? Or do you think you're setting yourself up with a potentially incredibly risky mistake? So it takes a lot of time to do this job right. A second issue is the time that it takes to bring a candidate in and do the logistics to figure out how are we going to do the training, the onboarding, the ramp up, the integration into an organization. If we don't have the right candidate that's been guaranteed by an executive recruiter, and we lose that candidate, we're going to have to start this process all over again, and it becomes incredibly painful.
And I think I want to mention about that one, because right now that's such a big one. Right now, time is the killer of deals. And we say that all the time in sales, but when it talks about candidates, right now we've got the same problem. Candidates have so many options that the amount of time it takes to get them in, interviewed, ramped up, talk about compensation, second interview, maybe a phone conversation, maybe a Skype, get them, fly them in, look at the area, put them through the processes, send them back home, give them time to look for a place. All that stuff has to be really moved up in a speedy way. And when you are talking about a person who does other things other than just this process, it could take a long time.
There is the saying, and we use it here too, that time kills all deals. So if you have that all-star candidate and they really are the champion that you feel that you're looking for, they do have other options. And one of the things that puts a lot of gray hair in business leaders' heads, and that is somebody taking a counteroffer. 92% of the time a counteroffer won't work out and they'll be gone in 18 months, but it doesn't stop everybody from taking it. What I mean by a counteroffer, David, is if you are at the Smith Company and you have a sales executive there who's been doing a great job, he gets recruited over away from the Smith Company to the Jones Company. Well, if this thing drags on too long, Mr. Smith might catch word of it and say, we don't want to lose this guy. Maybe we need to sweeten the deal. And if you're not dealing with a professional recruiter who has already helped the candidate understand the fallacy of taking a counteroffer and talked about, if you were worth so much money, why didn't they give you that before you told them you were leaving? There's all kinds of issues around that, of breaching the employment relationship. But as this process, which takes a lot of time, drags on longer, because in the midst of it, the HR generalist and the existing business leaders, they've got a business to run. They've got travel commitments. They've got a trade show that's coming up. They've got new products. They've got to do their business. And so what usually happens is the hiring decision we thought we'd be able to make in the next couple of weeks becomes the next couple months, because we couldn't put out enough fires to get to it.
You know, it's interesting. I just find that candidates today are more savvy as well. They can go online. They can look things up. They think differently. They're much more in tune with the market. Are you also seeing that as a challenge for employers?
What I'm seeing is, I would liken it to any restaurant that can have a Yelp review. You ever use Yelp? It's a website that says, here's my review of the meal that I got or the hotel that I stayed in. And so today, we've got a multitude of things like glass door or ladders or different things where different types of companies can be profiled, and one disgruntled employee can put some negative data on the internet that stays there for a lifetime. So it's tough from an education standpoint, because the question is, are you getting accurate information or just getting the biggest mouth who had the time to post something good or bad on the internet? Is it an accurate representation? A good executive recruiter takes the time to understand how to tell the story of the company that he's representing. And surprisingly, there are people good at banking or widget making who aren't very good at telling their own business story.
That's so true. There is no question about that. This is a different time, right? It's a different time in history where technology has created a platform where people share all their information and all their data, if you want to say. They also share sometimes compensation, which they can. There's nothing illegal about that. They can share anything they want. And so you don't have the same level of, if you want to say, quietness across the platform. And you need people to help navigate that. And I think that's part of what we're talking about today.
Well, it's a tall order to get the right person in the right job at the right place. It's a tall order to expect somebody to leave a company or an organization where they're profitably employed and doing an exceptionally good job. There's got to be some compelling reasons. And it's hard to tell that story. What would be the reasons? We're the best. We treat people well. I mean, we got to get beyond some of these generic statements and really dig in. So our recruiters do two things. A, they spend the time to learn what the company culture really is like and the personalities, and ask themselves, what would it be like if I recruited somebody to this company and they got to sit next to the president on a cross-country plane trip from Portland, Maine to Portland, Washington? What would that look like? How would the personalities fit? It's pretty hard to find that on a resume. That takes a whole different set of analytical tools.
You know, it's interesting, as we talk about recruiting in the modern age, which is what we're talking about, right? Using a different set of metrics, a different set of thought processes as we put this together, and as it has changed the recruiting industry in general. Would you agree that even at the executive recruiting level, it's a big change from what it was even 2 or 3 years ago?
The term change is an interesting one, because we've heard that the personal computer would eliminate the need for all paper. We heard that the fax machine, if you can remember what one of those things is or was, the fax machine was going to eliminate the U.S. mail. Federal Express was going to eliminate the need for any type of other delivery. No. Technology does change things, and it is a different market today. And there are technology tools that can support the decision-making and make the analysis better or more accurate. But talent and hiring is really a person-to-person thing. So while the environment has changed and the number of candidates, if I post a position, and this is an actual example, a position was posted with a well-known financial institution in this area, and it was an executive-level position, and I asked the recruiting leader, I said, when you post a position like this, how many people respond? He said, at this level, with the recognition that we have in the market, we'll have 2,000 to 3,000 applications that we'll receive in the first hour. So, yeah, the market has changed because there's just so much volume. And the theory was that's going to make everything easier. In fact, it's actually constructed a whole new set of problems, and that's screening people out.
Yeah, that's another whole process problem of just the electronic screening that people apply, and then you allow the machines to make decisions, and sometimes good candidates don't get through. And I think that's probably another difference between individual companies doing their senior-level positions and really using executive recruiters or headhunters to screen carefully every resume that comes through the process.
think it through. The people who've had a significant impact on our country never would have made it through an applicant tracking system, many of them. For instance, Steve Jobs, if it was all up to getting screened by an applicant tracking system, there never would have been an Apple computer because he never would have made it. He didn't have the credentials. Sandra Day O'Connor, she could never make it to the Supreme Court. She was homeschooled for a number of years. I mean, Richard Branson, he didn't finish high school. The founder of IKEA, I mean, I could go on and on and on, but there's many more exceptions to using one cookie-cutter approach for profiling and trusting the future of any organization and the profitability of that organization solely on an applicant tracking system. It's a dangerous move to make, but plenty of people do it because they just have to screen out this avalanche of applications and resumes that they get from every corner of the world.
We're talking with Mark Gonska. He's the Executive Vice President and leads the outplacement practice for Dyson Company. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsinme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
The best paints for the job site are at the Home Depot, specifically new Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer. It starts at only $23.98 a gallon. It's specially formulated to spray easier and cover walls faster, a lot faster. So you're done and on to the next job faster. Better paint means better jobs. New Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer starting at just $23.98 a gallon. You'll only find it in one place, the Home Depot. More saving, more do it. U.S. only.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today we're talking with Mark Gonska, the one, the only, from Cleveland, Ohio. And he's with Dyson Company, Executive Vice President and America's Career Coach. And we're talking about a PhD you don't want to have ever. And that's a poor hiring decision. You know, Mark, one of the things we were wrapping up with in the last segment, and I think we just need to hit one more topic on it, is the cost, right? The cost of hiring a headhunter, for example. One of the things that's very important to discuss is about, hey, what happens if the person doesn't work out? And you have a guarantee typically with a recruiter.
We do. And the cost of a poor hiring decision means we're going to have to go through this process again. And if you're on your own, you'll be spending all that time and duplicating incredible efforts and probably frustrating most of the people on the team. But the costs are significant. There is, in many cases, a guarantee that's involved with by using a professional recruiter. And ultimately, we're going to present candidates, all of whom can do the job and do the job well, and then the employer gets to pick which one they like the best. It's a great opportunity for them to take ownership, but after we've done all the background work, and it's a substantial amount of time and a substantial amount of focused effort to make this better candidate get there faster before somebody else hires her or him. And there's a lot to be said, not only about the cost of bringing somebody on and then if they fail to work out, but what does that say to your reputation when you have had an opportunity to talk through how great this new employee is and they wash out for whatever reason? That can impact an organization's reputation, and you can insulate yourself against much of that by using a professional recruiter. Now, how much does it cost to replace the candidate that's been the result of a poor hiring decision? Well, I've seen a lot of different numbers, but I think typically you can count on 2.5 to 3 times their annual compensation will be involved when we consider all the dynamics of doing the entire search again and replacing the candidate, the result of a poor hiring decision that just didn't work out for whatever reason. Many positions really would cost more. And if you start thinking about things like relocation costs that might be involved or the expenses relative to bringing candidates in, it's like flushing good money down the toilet. So there's a lot to be said for the confidence and the protection that you have by hiring an executive recruiter with a guarantee.
So somebody's out there and they're saying, well, look, I've never really used a recruiter before. I don't really understand what even the process is or what the big deal is. Could Mark, could you take us through maybe a kind of an overview of, you know, how the careful recruiting and hiring sounds like, and what a person could expect or should expect, let's put it that way, should expect from a professional executive recruiter?
Sure. I'll be happy to. The professional headhunter actually creates, enhances, or updates the job description. And there are plenty of employers who haven't taken a look at those job descriptions in years or decades. And their business is different, yet the job specs have not been changed or improved. So the headhunter then learns how to tell a compelling story that would bring the best and the brightest employee good reasons on why to leave their existing employer and come and join the new company. That's a really important story to tell, and many employers good at what they do are not very good at selling their own reasons for joining the company. The professional headhunter then is going to be asked, well, what do you suppose we'd have to pay? We really haven't looked at compensation for this role. We had Ethel in this role, and she's 85 and joined us when she got out of high school with Abraham Lincoln, and we don't really know what today's, can we pay the same as what Ethel's been getting? So the professional headhunter commissions a compensation study for this specific position so we can look at real data rather than a gut feeling or a comparison of what Ethel used to make. The professional recruiter then starts a pretty ambitious task, whether it's a technology search, whether we use things like LinkedIn recruiter tools, whether we use our own personal networks that we've developed, sometimes over 10, 20, 30 years of time, professional recruiter is going to reach out to well over 100 potential candidates that fit the basic criteria for the job. And that's a helpful thing to do in a couple of ways. It allows calibration on a scorecard that the headhunter has developed with the employer to determine how do we rank and what are the criteria and who are we really looking for and how can we get beyond the gut feeling and actually have some objective criteria to measure candidates against. Out of the 100 plus potential candidates, maybe 20 of those or so are vetted for closer scrutiny and face-to-face interviews with the. And sometimes it's done via Skype today or different methods, but they'll have more direct in a second beyond a screening interview with an executive recruiter. The goal there, David, is to get beyond the resume, beyond the LinkedIn profile, beyond the application, and get a sense of really who the candidate really is. Next, the executive recruiter asks the selected candidates for what we call a letter of interest. Well, we want them to write that in their own words. And here's what the letter of interest says. It explains why the candidate, why she or he feels they're the right person for the job and why this employer is the right person for them. And it's really interesting the number of candidates who we thought, they said they were excited about the job, and then they never even took the time to comply and write that letter of interest. It's a surprising number of people who won't do that, and that's a great way to screen out candidates that talk a big game, but they won't even do some of the most basic things to get there. So they're off our list. Then, after further evaluation and perhaps some psychometric testing for organizational fit and some more discussion for interpersonal fit, we're going to narrow the field down to 5 or 6 candidates, all of whom can meet the basic non-negotiables for the job and have the recruiter's confidence that they're a good fit from chemistry and interpersonal soft side fit. We conduct a background check on each of those because you never know. It's not a matter of gut feelings. It's not a matter of who looks good and smells good. We've got to insulate the employer against the unforeseen things that might be uncovered in a background check. Another important thing that you don't often think about, David, is that a professional headhunter pre-closes each of the final candidates on compensation, benefits, and other things that might have been discussed in the offer. So there's nothing worse than finding the person you think is going to be the right candidate, and you go through a series of interviews, and then they sit down for the final big dinner at the steakhouse to confer with the owner of the company and give the offer, and for whatever reason, the candidate backs out. That happens a lot in the let's recruit ourselves scenario. And instead, you can avoid that element of a poor hiring decision by using a professional headhunter who pre-closes and gets an agreement in advance with the candidate that if they are offered this money and this set of perks, they will accept the job. That's really important, that pre-closing stage.
And I think that's such a critical piece because, you know, as you said, it is hard sometimes for employers to pre-close. The conversation is awkward at best because they have the negotiating person that is going to be talking to the person about the job. And that is one of the, if you want to say, the real advantages of executive recruiters. They can have conversations because they're not actually doing the hiring. They're just doing the screening and the processes. And this makes a big difference in their ability to dig deeper and find out what really is going on with that candidate.
Well, it's getting harder and harder. In California and some other parts of the country, you can't ask somebody what kind of compensation they had in their last job. So the notion of where should the offer be can be a real question mark, a real wild card, unless you have data and you have many years of experience to understand where that number needs to be at the market rates. And it's not as easy as just looking at salary.com and picking a number. Good luck with that one.
No, you're absolutely correct, especially where, as you said, some states have banned it. Massachusetts has banned it as well. You also have banned the box, which, of course, means that you can't ask questions about their previous, any record that may have. Background checks, as you know, in some states you have to do it after you've hired them and given them a conditional offer. So there's a whole bunch of different rules and regulations, of course, depending upon the state that you're being recruited in.
Let me address that just for a second, because it's not uncommon to ask for references from a candidate. Give me a reference, somebody who can speak to your work ethic or your skills or somebody you've worked with in the past, right? That's pretty common.
Very common.
But a good executive recruiter is not going to look at exclusively the references that the candidate handed, because I wouldn't use that name unless they're going to give a favorable reference. And there are certain things that I can't ask, but I can talk with as many people from the XYZ company, their current or former employer, as I choose to. Again, it takes time, it takes some digging, it takes some savvy on how to ask the questions in a legal way and get the information you're not going to get necessarily from the candidate or from their hand-picked set of references that they handed you when everybody was smiling.
No, it's very true. It's very, very rare you get a bad reference. Though I must confess, I have had it happen. I have had somebody say, quote, "They put me down as a reference," of which I responded, "Yes." And their response was, "That was dumb." So anyways, it's just sometimes funny when you do get that, but you are absolutely correct. And as we wrap up in the next segment, which is coming up right in a few minutes, I want to make sure that we get a real good recap of today's show and the things that people are going to be talking about. So you're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, Stephen Chulo, and we're talking with Mark Gonska, Executive Vice President. He leads the outplacement practice for Dyson Company. He also is America's Career Coach, and Dyson Company is a leading executive search firm. So, hey, you know, we got a lot of stuff we've talked about today. We've talked about a PhD you don't want. Of course, that's a poor hiring decision. And we've talked a little bit about why, if you want to say it, executive recruiters may be what people perceive to be a little expensive, but in fact, they're not that expensive when you actually pull it all together and look at what actually gets done for you. As we wrap up today, this show, Mark, talk to me about one or two things that an organization, if they're really thinking about doing this, should make sure that they do in preparation for that call to a search firm.
I think it's a good idea to get references from your peer group and find out who's been successful, because when all is said and done, there's a whole lot more said than done when it comes to sales. So what I want to do is I want to interview members of my peer group and ask them for specific recommendations of recruiters that they've had success with. That's step number one. And step number two is recognizing that I'm going to spend the time on the front end to clearly and enthusiastically get a clear job description of what I want. Not only the big picture role, but I also want to have a clear understanding of the resources for the candidate that I'm going to select. I want to look at also the responsibilities and expectations and deliverables. And I want to be clear on the rewards that we're going to offer. And discussing these with an objective third party, the executive recruiter who does this for a living, is a great time saver and investment. One thing you want to do is make sure that you can be available to interview a candidate, because good candidates have to leave their particular job and they have to coordinate their travel. So really, it's a partnership with a good recruiter. The employer has to partner and be willing to expend the time to interview a candidate as well.
Do you find that when this is all said and done, you get more and more repeat companies that come back and say, hey, you know what? After putting it all together, this was not that expensive when I now have a great hire, and I'm going to come back and do more recruiting here.
That's very satisfying because that tells us a volume. We've had, in fact, we have a quote on our website from an employer that said, we could have looked 100 years to find the candidate that you delivered and we hired. He's a rock star. And I can't tell you how many times we've just been beaming here as we reiterate that story, and we know the personalities involved and what the negotiating was to get this individual who actually had multiple offers. You know, what that's part of what you don't think about. The best players often do have multiple offers, so how do you win them over to your side and avoid the counteroffer games? So do we have repeat customers? Yes, we do, and it's very satisfying. But there's more than just the joy that we have. When we get a deeper understanding of the culture of the organization, we can do a better job as well.
You're absolutely correct. And Mark, I want to thank you so much for being on the HR Power Hour today, providing great information. And as always, love having you on as a guest.
David, it's been a delight. Thank you.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VerilDana.com.
Hi, this is Doug Currier from VerilDana. Let's talk about retaliation. Most employers have a policy encouraging employees to bring forward concerns about harassment, safety issues, ethical issues, and other problems at work. The company's policies assure employees that they will not be subject to retaliation, and no doubt the employers mean it. Retaliation claims, however, are happening with increased frequency. And more often than not, the retaliation alleged is not what you would expect. It's not about being fired or passed over for promotion, although we still see those claims too. Often the retaliation alleged is much more subtle, being excluded from meetings, being micromanaged, not being given the same educational opportunities as other employees, being cut out of lunchroom discussions, being the recipient of irritated or snide comments. Supervisors sometimes fail to recognize that when an employee makes a complaint, the employee often will be quick to perceive any negativity that follows to be an act of retaliation. Managers need to be sensitive to that possibility and more thoughtful about how to communicate with employees who have made complaints about what is happening and why, even if the topic seems totally unrelated to the complaint. I encourage you to contact a member of VerilDana's Labor and Employment Law Group if you have any questions about this or any other concern impacting your workplace.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VerilDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.